Hey everyone, before we get started, just want to do a quick reminder that you can sign up for a free trial of our projection system over at dfsr.com/MLB. That'll get you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You can go over to our chat room and just ask some of our users how they enjoy the service. They'll give you their honest answer, and we wouldn't point you over there if we didn't know they weren't happy with it. So dfsr.com/MLB, and you're all set. And once again, a quick ask to go over to iTunes and just rate and review us over there. It really helps to boost us up the iTunes charts to have reviews over there. So go over to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. It really helps us out a lot. We appreciate it. All right, let's get on to some Friday baseball. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, July 6th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to break down a full Thursday slate in baseball going here. Buddy, real quick, before we get to that, he was chalk, but the Alex Wood thing last night, he gets pulled after 84 pitches. There's nothing safe with Alex Wood at this point. Like, if it's going to be 10 strikeouts through 7 innings or whatever and 2 hits, and it's 84 pitches and done in a close game, like, going forward, are we able to trust pitch counts like that? Like, we've been really talking about pitch counts a lot this year.
And yeah, especially for the Dodgers. I mean, I think we know that now. By now, that's the plan with the Dodgers. The interesting thing is this isn't anything new for most of those pitchers, so they still remain pretty appropriately priced relative to their skill level. And guys like Wood and Kershaw in particular just have such a high skill ceiling that it still probably will make sense. But yeah, you got to be aware of it. I mean, you're just not going to get, if you couldn't get a complete game out of him last night, you're never going to get one out of him.
Well, complete game, like 95 pitches. I mean, like,
that's what I mean, though. Like, what we just learned is that 7 innings is the ceiling. So that's just something we have to take into account. And it's going to, honestly, his price is going to climb after that last start. And my expectation on how deep in the games he's going to go is going to go down. Because the thing is, too, like, spreading 80 pitches out over 7 innings is just like no workload at all. Like, pretty much all injury experts agree that the real risk is when you have those long innings, especially late in the games. And given that he was just basically just throwing 7 pitches an inning, 11 pitches an inning. I can't begin to understand why they're being so overly cautious. But hey, it's their big asset, so I guess I can't begrudge them too much.
Yeah, it's like those 23, 24 pitch innings in the seventh when you're like, when the announcer, like, cliche says, like, you're searching for something here or you're digging deep or whatever. Exactly. Usually digging deep comes at like the cost of like your rotator cuff or something like that.
Yeah, it's a 10-day stint on a DL is what that
is. Right, like the old school way of thinking is wrong. But that being said, like, 84, like, when he wrote through 6 pitches in the first, I was like, oh, this is going to be the night. He's going to go all the way here. And then, he actually kept that pace pretty much and still just got yanked in the seventh. All right, let's talk about a double. Well, we have an afternoon slate of games here on Thursday, and then we have an evening slate. The afternoon starts at 1:10 Eastern time. It looks pretty grisly, man, for pitchers. I don't know. You called this, when we were talking real briefly off the air, you called this a flyover slate, which I liked.
thanks, man. I'll just pretend like I just made it up. Yeah, this is like a flyover slate for me, man. Like, when I look at these pitchers here, basically when I'm looking at slates, I'm figuring that I'm going to get most of my safety from the pitcher position. Alex Wood was a good situation for this last night, where you can kind of anchor a big portion of your salary. And I think we have a great example of someone like that tonight in Chris Sale. For the early slate, you're basically just saying, like, yes, I'm willing to accept greater volatility here for what actually might wind up amounting to a pretty sizable edge. When I look at the pitchers, I'm looking right at Michael Wacha. I think that even though he's broken a lot of hearts in DFSR land this year, his peripherals, the 8.6 Ks per nine, 3.2 walks per nine, pretty reasonable ground ball rate, all look pretty good. And it's really just the BABIP that's taken him to class. Like, the 342 BABIP does not look sustainable to me. All the numbers would drop if that got more in line with his historical averages around 301. And if that comes to fruition, he's easily the best pitcher on this slate, and it might not even be close.
Yeah, we don't have a line on the Cubs game yet, and that's probably just one of those. It's the classic. It's just this is what happens at Wrigley. You just wait for those that are the uninitiated, which most people aren't. Most times you're just waiting for the wind direction to sort itself out so they can make a designation about whether the ball's going to be flying in or flying out of the park. So, I mean, Michael Montgomery is a big favorite there at minus 160. That's probably built a lot on just the Cubs' publicly nature in general, and they're just a decent team as compared to the Brewers. But not having the line there, I would probably set that line without knowing. It doesn't look like there's huge gusts of wind, just looking at a brief, looking at the weather on our site right now, but my guess would be 9, 9.5, somewhere for the over-under.
He's a bookmaker and a weatherman, folks. You don't often get that kind of combination in one spot, but we've got it. That's why
my wife loves it. My wife loves it. That was absolutely one of the, that was on my husband resume. I was like, you know, decent earner, knows a ton about weather, can actually just, like, blindly set odds on baseball games. And she was just like, oh, baby, let's do this
thing. Yeah, you're a regular, a modern-day Leonardo da Vinci.
I mean, basically. So I would say, yeah, my guess is 9, 9.5, somewhere in there, just because of the state of the pitching there. So, you know, I think I'm with you. To me, this early slate strikes me as I just want to play DFS, and I'm willing to, like, look for I'm looking for
a then you'll fit right in our chat room at DFSR.com, Doug, because we got a lot of your people.
But I'm not saying that, like, pejoratively, right? Like, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, this is, like, you know, if you're a sports fan and this is your entertainment cost, and I think that's how a lot of people view DFS, and I think it's totally fine and reasonable and just bet. I mean, I wish this had been around, like, in the early days when we were just grinding out weekly and season-long fantasy, sort of making some of the same decisions with a lot less on the line, and it was just, like, a lot, I think, a lot less fun, too. But, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but this slate does strike me as, I just want to play, I want to have some rooting interest in the games. And at that point, I'm just willing to kind of search for who I find to be the best value. And I agree with you that it is probably a Waka here. But it's not like because, you know, sometimes people say like, you know, oh, I can't believe, you know, we played Waka here, like if he gets blown up or whatever. And you're just like, look, these decisions like aren't all the same. Just because a pitcher is the best in this group of like four games or whatever doesn't mean it's like equally the best as Sale later on during the evening. I think sometimes people have trouble making that distinction of, you know, these are degrees of safety, right? It's like a weather forecast, like, right? Let's like, just because it was exactly. Like 20% chance of rain and it didn't rain, you know, you don't say the guy's wrong or whatever it is. So, like, I think people do a bad job evaluating that part of it sometimes when looking at these things and, you know, calling all slates being equal right from the start.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's all going to come relative to who other options are. And if you go too crazy trying to get a Chris Sale type on every single slate, you miss out on a lot of potential profitable opportunities. You know, I understand why people are more risk averse in baseball just because it has the highest volatility associated with it anyways. And since the pitcher slot is so high leverage, like it can feel pretty bad to roster a guy like Waka and just happen to get one of those nights where it doesn't come together, right? And it won't come together for him sometime. But I think coming off his great start against Washington, backed up by a pretty good start against Cincinnati, where the K rate has also stabilized at the higher level we were sort of expecting from him going into this season, it's just such a clear call. And I actually think when I think about the other players people are going to talk themselves into, the people who have been burned by Waka earlier this season, it actually looks like a really, really good slate if just making money is your only goal.
Anibal Sanchez is coming off a pretty good game for him. From last game, he went 6 1/3, five strikeouts. He'd been pretty bad leading up into that. He's a slight favorite here against the Giants, though not a big one. I can see people possibly talking themselves into him. His K rate's fine. The walk rate's what kind of same situation as Waka's. The exit was absolutely horrible at five, at over five.
That's the fly ball rate. Like, he's been giving up more and more fly balls throughout his career, or as his career's progressed. And he just turns them into home runs like nobody's business as well. We talk about true talent, home run to fly ball rates. The guy just gives up so much hard contact that 16% home run to fly ball in 2015, 15.5% last year, and 17.9% this year. That's just what you can expect from the guy. And you just can't only get 34% ground balls if 17% of your home runs or your fly balls turn into home runs. So great guy to target stacks against in many cases, but yeah, the K rate does mean that there's some upside there if, you know, some of those fly balls just land in the warning track.
The line has moved away from him, which is really saying something because this Giants offense is real bad. Like when the Giants offense in a non-really, you know, pretty park-neutral power park in Detroit, if the Giants are up to five implied runs, that's kind of like what you see with them in like a decent matchup in Coors, kind of. So like, it kind of does say, and that line again is moving away from him. It started with them somewhere like in the mid fours and is all the way up to five. So if you're making a decision, if you look at Sanchez and you say, oh, some of his numbers are similar to Waka's, but then you just, if you want to just have something to be able to pick the difference between, you just go look at Vegas. Waka -150 with a 9.5, Sanchez -108 with a 10 run line. So it's laid out pretty clearly just from a Vegas standpoint. So I don't think I'm going to be playing too much of this early slate. I don't really like the way it looks. I like to focus on when we have just true clear cut, even if it's going to be chalk pitching for cash games like Wood last night. He was like an 80% start or something like that. Yep. I'm just kind of fine with that. I mean, look, there's going to be some variance then around the bats, and that can be hard to manage sometimes just like kind of mentally when, you know, like if you have a bat that kind of gives you a zero, especially on a night like last night where there were so many teams in great spots, that it kind of was hard to hone in on which team you wanted, right? Like,
there were some high leverage choices, like both Shinsu Chu and Ramil Tapia were around 20% starts. One of them scores mid-20s points, the other scores zero. Like, that doesn't feel great for sure.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's what I was saying too. I mean, sometimes I won't know like which one the top are like for our system. I won't really remember like which one the top lineup is because like situations, especially like last night, I'll run 10 cash game lineups, which I think is fine. Like it's grinding at a smaller edge for in you know kind of just reducing the variance so that. Because, like, I was saying to you that even, like, I mean, this is, like, a micro decision, the Chew versus Tapia thing just happened to be in our system. I'm not sure everyone was wrestling with that decision. But, you know, it ends up being one of those things where, you know, Tapia is in the top lineup and then Chew is in, like, 40% of lineups. You actually have a greater exposure to the player that was better. And that can go the other way for you. Wrong. Kind
of
go wrong.
Of course, yeah. Well, then that's why you often play the top 10 lineups. I tend to just track the top overall lineup just because I like to keep a level of accountability in terms of just making sure the overall optimal lineup is performing, or when people have questions, you know, that's the thing they tend to look at. But yeah, exactly. I mean, you can spread out your exposure when there's a lot of good opportunity and mitigate a lot of that heartbreak for sure. So like last night was a night where those of us who play just one lineup were feeling pretty heartbroken. But if you play the top 10 lineups, you probably just felt fine. One note on Wood too, because I think some people see that 80% start and when it's such a clear cut case and they actually feel a little discouraged. Sure, you'd always like it for it to be like a 60 or a 50% start, but let's not be too greedy. When 20% of the field effectively doesn't put a lineup in, which is what happened last night, like you just couldn't compete if you didn't have Alex Wood, it's still a great and a very, very profitable position. You can almost throw darts at your hitters in a situation like that when you get a performance like that out of Wood. So I don't feel bad at all when I key on a guy who's so much better than the field and get an 80% start out of him.
No, I don't either. It's like playing rake free plus some, right? So
that's like overlay.
Yeah, right. That's what you're basically getting from a situation like that. And it's even better. It's even made better in those situations where, like, you know, I think there was a situation like I think a couple days ago with Kluber where I was like, I thought he was going to be in the same position as Wood with like 85% start, and he was like a 55% start, and I instantly was in the chat room saying, "Oh my god, I would have like just increased my exposure here because like this is total insane behavior. Like I can't even understand it." So, that's a good point. Like 80% is not 100%, and you are still gaining an edge over the people that just saw, you know, fit to go a different direction. Let's talk about, and I think we're going to be in that same situation here with Chris Sale tonight. I don't know if we're going to be in the same situation in terms of ownership, though I suspect we are. There's really no case for cash games, right? There's like you can't make a case really against him or for anybody else here, right? Like especially on FanDuel where it's only one. And you'll see often too. I know I'm kind of digressing. I know I asked you a question and I'm going to answer another question, but you'll often see the ownership levels higher on DraftKings because like you can't make two decisions away from him.
Yeah,
like, exactly. You can make one decision away on FanDuel and just because you're not allowed to like choose two, but on DraftKings you'll often see a guy like his ownership percentage just be a little bit higher because they're like, well, I could talk my way out of them once, but not twice. So I do think you see the ownership there. Is there a case to be made, at least on FanDuel, for anybody else, or is it like so clear-cut in your mind as to just move on and we'll talk about some ways to pivot in tournaments?
For the nighttime slate, you're asking?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, just Chris Sale. There's no other decision to be made when it comes to pitchers for the nighttime slate, at least for cash games. Right now, it's such an unusual situation because normally we talk about how you want to sacrifice some points per dollar expectation in order to secure just the highest aggregate points just because the algorithms don't really line up in terms of incentives, which is to say pitchers oftentimes just have higher points per dollar expectations in general, so you wind up allocating a large portion of salary at slightly suboptimal rates just because you need the bulk. With Sale, you actually get both, which is again so unusual that it's hardly ever happens. I mean, like for him to be right now, he's like behind Tom Kohler in terms of overall points per dollar expectation, and if that's going to be the case, it's just so clear cut that I think it's even more clear cut than it was last night with Alex Wood, and it's one of the more exciting slates to play this year as a result.
The only reason I don't see it as clear-cut is only because of the price. I mean, look, it's as clear-cut. The Wood thing was made even better because he was just, like, cheap. like at least Sale's not cheap.
Sale's not that expensive either. He's 11-8. I mean, that's not a lot to pay for this level of production.
No, you're correct. And I think, there's not going to be any reason that I'm going to find to get away from it. 13-3 on DraftKings, too, is really pushing it. But again, it doesn't really...
Yeah, DraftKings, I thought you asked specifically about FanDuel. DraftKings, it's a little bit of a different story. But on FanDuel, it's a no-brainer and no-brainers from where I'm sitting.
I agree. I do think we see that ownership percentage right up there. You know, it's sometimes there are times where these shorter slates do make it a little tougher for others. It's not going to be for us. It's just going to be a situation for us. It's just going to be you'll find the bats. Sometimes these shorter slates do make it a little bit tougher because just with less teams playing, there are less chances to just grab some of those cheaper bats here and there that maybe move up to, like, you know, the Ramel Tapias of the world, or Bradley Zimmer is a good example last night who hits leadoff for the Indians. I know he goes 0-for-5, but that's a situation.
Sure does.
Yeah, but you know what though, and that's one of those things that makes baseball completely maddening, right? Like to me, like, Bradley Zimmer was the easiest all-time punt play like you could ever have last night. Basically, like, he's basically near the minimums. He's hitting leadoff in a pretty prolific offense, right? Like, this is just the exact situation. It's not like Manny Margot, like, hitting at the top line for the Padres. You're like, well, yeah, it stinks, but so do the Padres. Like, we're cutting it close here. You know, Jose Perella, guys like this. No, Zimmer, if you get these guys for, like, 2,000, 2,200 or whatever, they're going to hit the top of the lineup. He got 5 plate appearances. That's exactly what you wanted. He didn't turn them into anything. But anyway, those guys showing up are important. It's less likely they come up on shorter slates like this, and I still think it doesn't matter because I'd rather just play a guy hitting eighth that stinks and just make sure that the sales arm gets into the lineup. If I'm looking for starting pitcher 2 on DraftKings or a way to pivot in tournaments off sale, and again, this might just be another night where you want to eat the chalk too because he just is better than a lot of these other guys. And I'm talking strictly for tournaments, but where else can we go? Let's talk about some of the other arms going here, make some cases for and against them. Where would you start, either starting pitcher 2 on DraftKings or a pivot on FanDuel for tournaments?
Well, I think there's some somewhat exciting pivots for big tournaments on FanDuel that I'd want to key in on first. The first is Robbie Ray. He's not a secret at this point, but Ray this season is one of the league leaders in terms of strikeouts per 9 innings. The 11.4 number, 11.5 now, is just through the roof. That's the kind of K production that you just simply don't see on sub $12,000 pitchers by and large. It's competitive with Sale's K rate, for instance, and you're paying quite a bit more for him. And it's just backing up last season's breakout season. Last year, he was 11.25 Ks per 9. So, you know, the overall numbers are a little bit worse this year. He's added on a few more walks. The ground ball rate has gone down. But the electric upside remains. And, you know, the Dodgers, they do bring to the bring to bear a bunch of left-handed bats that he should do pretty well against. I don't think it's not anything I would ever consider for cash games. But in the unlikely scenario, like, I guess a way to think about it would be this. Playing him over Sale in a big tournament means you get $2,500 extra to play with for your bats. And also, there are just scenarios where he outscores Sale on a raw points basis. Maybe he gets the win and Sale doesn't. Some goofy thing happens there. Like, there are scenarios where he can just secure a few extra points, and that makes him a guy who has to be in play, because I'll guess that he's definitely going to be lower owned overall than Sale there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like you said, the K upside for him, if he's dialed in, we have seen games from him where he can just be, if he's hitting his spots, and he's really among the best pitchers in the league, right? But the problem is that's happened so few and far between, like, because his control is so erratic. And so when he's missing his spots, it really gets ugly. But again, for when you're talking strictly upside, these are just the kind of guys you want to look for, because if he's fully dialed in, he has the same sort of K upside as Sale, where you get some of the savings. Some of those Dodger righties, you know, they'll kind of move their lineup around a little bit. Logan Forsyth could hit the top of the line. Justin Turner's actually been a reverse platoon splits guys for his year, but this year he's better against lefties. That has begun to turn around over the last couple of years for him. I know that
so
was like
statistical his noise early on. Yeah,
it could be, right. It's hard to know which way it is. I think he's probably. I think if I I believe I looked at this correctly the other day, where he was kind of coming back to like a platoon neutral state, and I know for a fact he's been better against lefties this year. So that could be writing him off as just like sort of the Adam Jones type of just like being dreadful against lefties.
Yeah. Well, those guys are exceedingly rare. So normally when you see that, Chris Bryant actually showed his reverse platoon early in his career as well. Normally that's just a little blip, and unfortunately we oftentimes can't get splits numbers from the minor league games. And in many cases like that, I remember reading about Brian in particular when someone was asking on Twitter if he was a reverse platoon split guy. Someone with access to those data came out and said, no, he was like crushing lefties in the minors. He's so much better against them. Just like take a few deep breaths and understand that 50 plate appearances doesn't mean much. So, and as we know from baseball, somebody has to be the outlier. So even a few hundred plate appearances doesn't have to mean much necessarily, even though it often does.
Well, you know, and on the other side of this game, too, because this is an interesting game where we've seen the run line move down a little bit, I'm wondering your thoughts on Rich Hill. Rich Hill has a similar-ish profile to Robbie Ray in that they both have, you know, at least Rich Hill recently in his career, I'm going to say recently over the last 3 years, let's say, I take that back. He's been going on for a little while with the K stuff. He has not the same exact, like, sort of really high electric K stuff that Ray has, but pretty damn close. It's getting close to elite, more than 10 per 9 over the last couple of years for K strikeout stuff for him. The walks are his big bugaboo also, just like Ray. Actually walks more than Ray. He's walking close to five this year. But he is a favorite here. He's a money line favorite. And the implied runs for the Diamondbacks here are only 3.2. I mean, is there a case to be made that Hill, if you're looking at him like sort of just like against each other, I kind of maybe would lean Hill just because of the other contextual factors he has going for him.
Yeah, it's close. I mean, I think, you know, we brought this up when we promoted Wood last night, but the Diamondbacks are tremendously worse against left-handed pitching this season. They go from one of the very best teams in the league to one of the actual very worst, the top seven team in terms of strikeouts per nine, bottom three team in terms of WOBA. You get them out of Arizona and things only get worse. So I think Wood is actually, or Hill rather, isn't just these guys with nouns as their last name, both pitching for the same team. Come on now. but Hill is in a tremendous spot. The problem with him that I foresee is the pitch count issue, right? Like, his average starts per game this season is five. Like, you really want to throw it. It's less than five. He's 11 starts and 54 innings. That's really, really bad. Now, some of that was because he was getting chased from games early. I understand that. But also with the blister concerns, I have to think he's on at least as tight a leash as Wood. Maybe it's not quite so bad because he's just not quite as big an asset for the future. But it's hard to believe that he'll go out there and just throw a ton of innings. And for that reason, I would be a little bit more bearish, certainly, than Wood last night. And even just in terms of upside, I just feel like Ray, even though it's a much worse matchup, I feel like he has the potential to go deeper into the game.
I'm looking at pitch count for Hill over the last five games. 92 last game, and that game was out of hand against San Diego. They were up 8-0, so that was easy to pull in there. Game before, 99, 98, 105, 98, 97. I do think, unlike Wood, I do think there's a case here to be made that they are at least more inclined to push him to 100 just because they've done it five of the last six games, and I think there was just another piece of context that got him out early against San Diego. So I think that's not as big of a concern for me. I think I would probably slightly favor Rich Hill here over Ray just because of the matchup and just some of the other, like, you know, money line and run line kind of stuff that he has going for him, with the idea that I do think that Ray probably has a little bit more K upside. If we're going
I totally agree on the matchup piece. Like, the matchup piece is dramatically better. I think it's just, again, worth pointing out, he's Ray, except for he strikes out 1.5 guys less per nine and walks 0.7 guys more per nine. So he's like just a much worse Robbie Ray, basically.
I agree. And now I guess you're just asking yourself, where does the matchup get them to even? Does it keep Ray above him? You know what I mean? Like, the matchup for Ray is worse than the matchup for, and the win expectation is worse for Ray too. So I'm like,
well, it's like you always say, Doug, six in one hand, a half dozen in the other.
I don't know. Who knows what that means? You made that up. The cheaper arms on DraftKings, a couple guys that are coming to the top of the list here for us that you know, at least that the system is right now trying to pair with Sale, because you're not going to be able to pair. You really be hard pressed to spend, you know, close to $25,000 on Sale plus. You can do it if it's like Sale plus Kershaw, like those. That happened the other night with like Kluber plus Kershaw. You're like, all right, well, this is one of those very rare situations where maybe I can just allot this amount of my salary cap toward pitching. I don't think paying for Ray and Hill in this case is the situation I don't want to find myself there.
It's like when you used to be able to build your own teams and like in Nintendo games, and you could make like the top three guys on your team all have 99 home runs, 99 speed, all that. That's like the equivalent of playing Kluber and Kershaw.
Like Baseball Simulator 2000. I think that was
exactly
that was a game I was absolutely obsessed with, that game back in the day.
Me too. Like, have we never talked about this before?
I don't know. I can't believe it. Actually, I'm for the amount of we spent, like, I don't know. Forget the 10,000 hour rule. We're probably like pushing toward 20K hours of just like talking about
for sure. Well, and have we never talked about it? Oh, geez, we'll have to talk about that off air, because I want to bounce some strats off you that we ultimately landed on there.
Yeah, I just remember and then my game just randomly stopped working after a time, and I was absolutely devastated. And we were back in the day, like, you just weren't getting another one. And I'm like, that game stops working. That's the end of that. Go time to play outside. So the two guys, the two cheaper guys that are coming up in the system in terms of points per dollar that don't look, well, one looks worse than the other, I guess, but are Josh Tomlin and Francisco Liriano. Both are, well, Liriano's an underdog. Tomlin is a favorite against San Diego. Do you think that Tomlin ends up becoming a guy that people just want to pair with Sale here? He's facing San Diego. He hasn't been horrible. He hasn't been necessarily good, but he's cheap, right? Like, he's got a nice matchup. Win expectation is there for him. He's able to pitch, like, he's an able-bodied pitcher. Do you think he ends up just becoming like sort of like Trevor Bauer last night?
Yeah, I would actually equate Tomlin more to like this. He just fits more of the classic pitcher two profile for us on DraftKings, where it's okay but generally bad K stuff, almost no walks, tends to raise his floor a little bit. He's actually a great guy to stack against, incidentally, because he does give up a ton of home runs. He's another guy who's really, really struggled with home run to fly ball ratio. And all that being said, the $6,400 price tag probably means he's still a pretty reasonable play. I think you can expect him to give up some runs just because he kind of always gives up some runs. But one thing I'd like about him better than, say, Francisco Liriano is that I just feel like Liriano is, with the 5 walks per 9 on Liriano, there's a chance he just doesn't make it out of the second inning. And I think that taking all that together, it just depends what your goals are. I think you should never play Tomlin in a big tournament. If your goal is to come in first place, Tomlin will not be on the first place lineup tonight. And a guy like Liriano, he won't be. He will not be in the first place lineup in a big tournament on DraftKings tonight. Mark my words. Email me james@dfsr.com if it comes to fruition, and I'll dance for you. So, but a guy like Liriano, I mean, we saw he was highly owned when he pitched against Tampa Bay, I think it was 4 starts ago, and went up there and being incredible. I mean, for a guy in a $5,400 price tag to go out there and pitch 7 innings and get 9 Ks, that is not the type of production that's normally available at those prices. So, again, you just need to align your goals with your roster selection. I think if your goal is to kind of just try to get through the game without getting completely destroyed, Tomlin's your guy.
No, I actually kind of wish I hadn't like thrown them together, because I do see Tomlin as like a significant cut above just in terms of safety over Liriano for cash games. No, good point about
the San Diego matchup. We haven't even talked about that. That's where a ton of this comes from too.
And I know that San Diego got to Bauer last night. He was a chalk play on DraftKings as well. He should have been, and he was decent, right? Like he got the job done at the right point that he came in. San Diego ended up getting the win, and he kind of got in trouble late in the game, though I think the defense kind of screwed him a little bit, or kind of just elevated his pitch count just a little bit by booting the ball around early and allowing an unearned run. But no, I do think Tomlin ends up being a pretty popular play. He's just like that perfect matchup of, or that perfect mashup of just like cheap, just not bad enough to like make you want to just, you know, jump off a bridge going into the game before you roster him, and then he just has by far the best matchup going here. Other guys on the slate here, Ferry is pitching again here against Boston. I don't think I'm that interested in going there. Dinelson Lamet has been really good in terms of K stuff lately, but he's got a really bad matchup against Cleveland. He's an interesting guy if you want to just look for K's and hope that he can run hot. He's not the worst arm that you can throw out.
Oh, yeah, and that K stuff tracked from the minors too. Vegas hates it. Vegas thinks he's just going to get blown up based on the matchup, I would assume, but 12 Ks per 9, 2 walks per 9 this season, the 37 innings. I don't think it's going to land that high, but a guy who can settle in as like a Robbie Ray type, he's absolutely got that kind of stuff.
Right, at 7,000 on DraftKings, you don't really get that kind of K stuff for that price range at all, right? So, like, and now Cleveland's kind of the worst kind of team for him because they'll just wait you out over and over and over.
Oh, yeah, such a patient approach to say the walks, and they hardly strike out as well. It's a bad spot.
All right, before we get to, we'll do some stacks to close this thing out. Hit us up with a sponsor.
Sure. Today's podcast is brought to you by Camp Stomping Ground, which is where we're going to be next week. Summer camp.
They're not paying us to do another sponsor because I donated. This is only the other way. I donated money to that thing. So
CampStompingGround.com. It's a nonprofit summer camp that's largely funded on the back of DFSR profits, just because it's an expensive hobby of mine that I like to keep going. But on to a real sponsor. I knew that would get you giggling, buddy. That's why I went there. The real sponsor that we'll talk about today is FantasyFactor.com. FantasyFactor is great for people who like salary cap format DFS but don't want to play against people like us who put in hundreds of lineups every single night. You go to Fantasy Factor, you can play anywhere between $5 and $25 a night and pretty securely say that you won't be up against professional level players. So if you are a great player, but you just want to expend your buy-in just by a little bit, Fantasy Factor is a great fit there. If you're learning the game, it's an incredible place to go because, you know, most sites, for instance, don't have lineup optimizers too, so you won't see those cases where you have 100 guys all playing the exact same lineup too. So FantasyFactor.com, check them out, promo code DFSR, you get a 25% bonus, no drip, which means it goes directly into your account and you can put it into play after you make your deposit. So if you have FantasyFactor.com, promo code DFSR, go check them out and tell them we sent you.
It's a little weird on this late slate. It's actually like kind of the opposite of the earlier. So I wish they had like swapped a couple of these games in and out of each other because we actually have a sort of an opposite.
Just for our DFS purposes.
Well, it'd be nice, right? It'd be nice. But nice if like Rob Ranford and the MLB crew could just like think about us for once. Just think about us lowly DFS.
Yeah, they didn't do that on the 4th of July. I'll tell you that much. Around putting in lineups all day long.
Yeah, full on work day, baby. God bless America. So here's the thing with the evening slate. The difference here is, there's a lot of good pitchers going. There's only 7 games, and I would call, I don't know, at least half the pitchers here as above average or even better. So you have the guys we mentioned, Sale, Robbie Ray, Rich Hill. We didn't even talk about Lance McCullers, who's really, really good. Berrios has been decent at times. Gio Gonzalez, we mentioned Ferrier, he has some stuff. Tomlin, Liriano, and Lamet kind of has some stuff. That's like almost all the pitchers are, I would say, those are guys are all average or and to above average to absolutely elite. Maybe I'm wrong about one or two of the guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small slate in general, and so when you can list off that many names that don't make you cringe, like if they wind up in your starting lineup, you wouldn't be devastated. That's a pretty good group.
Right, and so what happens here is now we're stuck with where do we want to stack against them? And I think there's some pitfalls to stacking here. For instance, I'll make the case against our system to start, right? So when you run early lineups right now, you get a lot of Cleveland guys, which I get because they have a pretty high run line and they're just a good team in general. They're probably, them and the Astros are probably the two best offensive teams going on the slate. Except you get against a guy who could easily kind of like, not shut them out, but really, really limit their expectation here tonight, and a guy like Lamet. Are you worried about a situation like that where it's just going to default to some run lines here and just say Cleveland is maybe the team to go with? How much does it have you worried against a guy who has shown like kind of put away stuff?
It doesn't have me too worried. I tend to think that Vegas looks at this stuff and is as good at determining when teams are going to have a high expectation and when they're not. The fact of the matter is with Lamet, he still has given up a lot of hard contact. And, just as evidenced by the .259 BABIP, but the 17% home run to fly ball ratio. I tend to think that, and it's always hard to say, right? Because he's coming from the minors again, where data collection is so much worse. But he does give up a lot of fly balls. Like a lot of those Ks he gets are when he gets guys to chase up in the zone. If the Indians are going to be patient and aren't going to do that, then you could see him run some long innings. You could see him put a couple guys on base and give up a home run. I wouldn't be over the moon about this on a full slate. But given, kind of like we talked about Waka for the early slate, given that our options are sort of limited here, I really don't mind just kind of sticking my neck out on something like that. And if he winds up cutting through them, then he does. But the guys at the top of that lineup in particular are not the easiest guys in the world to strike out.
No, I'm with you. And I probably would stick with it. The line is actually moving around a lot here, so that might just end up changing some of the things in our system.
Yeah.
I'm seeing actually conflicting reports about whether it's 9 or 9.5. And that on a small slate like this, that actually does make it. That extra half run implication makes a huge difference in terms of just like what you can sort of expect out of a team. Other teams, any other teams that are kind of jumping out to you here that you like in good spots? I see some, I can make a case for a couple of these teams. I don't know if you have a thought one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for bad names of pitchers who are going to give up a lot of runs in general. I guess we didn't talk about the early slate, which we can point to. I just had a couple stacks pulled up there as well. The early slate's a lot easier here. You do have guys like Anibal Sanchez going. You have people like Sal Romano. As you translate to the later slate, it is a little bit more difficult. I do think someone like Mike Foltynewicz is a reasonable pitcher to target a stack against, just also because Washington has been one of the very best teams in terms of WOBA against right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, it's funny about Washington here against Foltynewicz, right? Like, so Washington has been just a really good offense this year, and they even lost Trey Turner, and they've still been able to slot some of these guys that have just, borderline, they've run kind of hot, been kind of good. Like, even guys like Brian Goodwin at the top of the lineup. Brian Goodwin's got, like, an .840 OPS this year. He's been good, right? Not to mention, like, Anthony Rendon's, like, this is real borderline, but, like, been, like, a sort of, like, borderline, like, MVP candidate this year. He's not going to win because there's guys that are way better, but, like, his OPS is in the mid-900s right now, and he hit sixth.
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, it's insane because I was actually going to make the case. What I was going to originally say was we have another case here of Washington just not getting it because they're just a perpetual we-don't-get-it team, like, in terms of, like, where to hit guys in their lineup, and, like, we just don't look at numbers, except that. And then I looked at Brian Goodwin, and I was like, damn it, he kind of does make sense, like, in that spot here. And then, like, if you want to go righty-left.
Well, yeah, they put Goodwin into the position to succeed, right? I mean, the guy does strike out a lot, but he can kind of get on base, and they just pitch him against righties. Like, he'll just disappear altogether if there's a left.
Rendon walks more than he strikes out this year. I mean, like, that's so rare.
Rendon's just a good hitter. I mean, he's just
like, I was looking at this yesterday because I was writing up something about Mookie Betts, and Betts does this also, but, like, there's, like, four or five guys on all of baseball that walk this season more than they strike out, and Rendon is one of them. He's got like 400 on base percent. He should be the leadoff hitter. the fact that they
write him a letter, dude. Maybe they'll
Dusty
send
Baker,
you a letter
Dusty
back.
Dusty Baker doesn't take notes, but
no, that's why I'm saying write a letter. You write a letter to Dusty Baker. You don't tweet at the guy if you want to get his attention.
So I'm with you kind of on Washington. After those two, Cleveland, Washington. After those teams, where else can we kind of look before we get out here?
Yeah, so I tend to try to look as much at the Vegas lines as I do at the actual names of the pitchers that go out on the mound because, my hypothesis forever has been these are major league hitters, like no matter what team you look at. And if you can point out a pitcher who's less than major league quality, you can really do some damage against them. So while the Mariners don't strike you as a traditional stacking team, the fact that they're facing Paul Blackburn tonight in his second major league start has me licking my chops to some degree. I mean, the Mariners already feature some pretty good left-handed bats like Cano and Seager, but they also just have the opportunity to hit against a guy who was worse than Josh Tomlin in the minors. He's basically like a poor man's Josh Tomlin at double A. So, you know, when you get a guy who just strikes out fewer than 6 per 9, has mid 2 walks, doesn't really do anything in sort of a plus way except for generate ground balls, it seems like a pretty reasonable stack target to me. So, yeah, he was decent in his first start. I don't think that there's too much to worry about there. I think the Mariners, I mean, Vegas kind of likes the Mariners tonight anyway, and I think just based on the fact that they're the Mariners means that they'll be under-owned for your big tournament purposes. And they're also relatively cheap, too. Like, you can get all these guys. Seager right now is $2,500. You know, like, these are really, really good prices, and I think you could do a lot worse than, especially if you want to pay up for sale, than to get some cheaper value there.
Yeah, no, I really like that, and it would be even better if, like, you could see, like, a guy like Dyson move up to the top of the lineup tonight. I don't think he'd do
it. Oh, yeah.
He probably just sits there at the bottom. But even, like, guys like Gamble, Cano, only $3,500. The run line just kept down just a little bit, probably because of the park, as opposed to some of the other parks going on the slate. But, no, I'm right with you on the Mariners. I do think you're going to be kind of picking and choosing your spots on this later slate just because there are so many good pitchers. It is kind of crazy, like, for us to, like, roll through an entire talk about all the pitchers and just, like, not mention McCullers, like, which is probably an omission. We probably should have spent a minute or two on him, but c'est la vie. Anyway, we're gonna get out of here. dfsr.com/mlb is the site. Go over there, free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And like I said at the top of the show, please go over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. It really helps us a lot to move up those iTunes charts for people looking for, if you think you're getting quality DFS and just baseball content in general, please go give us 5 stars. Anything less, absolutely unacceptable. Buddy, talk to you tomorrow for a full Friday in baseball.
CampStoppingGround.com.